are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. We're fired up for today's program. We're putting the pedal to the metal. We're going to run through a ton of games. I always say that, you know, I've never broken down as many games in a single program. I seem to say this on a daily basis. But really, I think we're breaking down seven games alone just with Steve Merrill. Pat Mayo joins me in studio with a super lock of the week. Gary and Thorne in studio. We talk some fantasy football matchups, hot roster style. We'll give you information about what hot roster is all about. I've got a DraftKings Millionaire Maker lineup made for you. So if you like football and baseball, then this is the place to be. If you like basketball, this will be the place to be in a week or two. But today, there's no basketball. There's football and baseball. And I don't know if it's just me, but there's something in the air. I'm telling you, the Major League Baseball playoffs have already produced more drama than a high school cafeteria, and we're only a couple of days in. You know, Halloween is rapidly approaching. The election is rapidly approaching as Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are scaring the hell out of the world right now. Fantasy players, well, fantasy players are outraged right now, as pissed as a cyclist smashing his bicycle. They're full of rage, and I understand why. Hell, Rob Gronkowski says that he can't go to the grocery store without people telling him, hey, Gronk, you suck. You're killing my fantasy team. It's going to be a crazy October. I can just feel it. Sort of has like a 1986 feel to it right now. All these big market baseball teams, all these crazy games, college football's off the hook. And, oh, yeah, there's clowns walking around scaring the crap out of everybody. There's a creepy clown syndrome going on across not just America or Canada, but across the world right now. But don't worry. If you're in the city of Toronto, you can, you can sleep safely right now, and you can unlock your door. You don't have to worry. Because the dude that threw the beer has been arrested. He's been arrested. Now, I believe his name is Ken Pagan, and it turns out he works for the Toronto Sun, which, you know, that's just shocking to me that somebody that works at the Toronto Sun would have done this, because the Toronto Sun is nothing but a beacon of morality and ethics. I mean, how many Pulitzer Prizes have the Toronto Sun won? Probably about as many as me. None! Shocking. Toronto Sun, yeah. So, listen, this guy goes down. I'm not even sure this is the guy. Now, everybody is singled out that this is the guy because he looks like a jerk and he's drinking a beer. But, you know, witnesses that were there say that it was actually a girl. Now, if you look, you can see, you know, there's kind of like an empty seat. I think that there's a girl sort of kneeling down right now. Now, when you look at this dude, he doesn't look like the type of dude that would be drinking light beer, all right? And in the pictures, he's got a cup. He doesn't have light beer. And who would drink light beer? A woman. Now, it would be good if we could get, like, DNA and fingerprints and stuff like this. Now, he has turned himself in, but that doesn't mean that he actually did it. And I was wondering, what if you went to a baseball game with your girlfriend, she threw the beer, and you're going down for it right now? Kind of hard to turn her in. Or maybe he's just trying to, you know, score with the chick. Took some chick from work there or something like that. Ultimately, criminally, this guy, whatever. Who cares? Doesn't really matter. You know, it's a minor mischief charge. You know, it was the biggest manhunt since Bin Laden. But in the end, his bigger problem will be with his employers. As the Toronto Sun might be a rag, but still, they might frown upon this dude throwing beers at people during games. Now, thank God, we live in a gotcha society right now, in which anything you do in your life, everything is filmed, and you're caught for everything. Now, fortunately, my indiscretions, they're like Mayor Quimby's, discreet. As, you know, if every time I got kicked out of a sporting event was actually on film, and everything that I've said in my life was actually on film, I'd be in jail for, like, ever. But what strikes me crazy about this, as this creepy clown epidemic takes center stage. In downtown Toronto just yesterday, a couple of creepy clowns decided to scare the crap out of some, like, 4 and 5-year-old kids at a preschool. Real classy. I would have crushed their skull with an aluminum baseball bat. Bring it on, bozo. But so these guys are running around and they get apprehended by Toronto law enforcement. Now, the creepy clowns turned out to be 15-year-old teenagers who go to the high school portion of the school and, quote unquote, they were just doing a video for YouTube and having fun. Well, I'll tell you what, how about we smack you upside the head, throw you in a jail cell for 24 hours and find out how much fun you are having. What kind of world are we living in right now? Like, seriously, the guy was a jackass for throwing a beer. But to me, the guy that threw the beer should get the warning. Don't do that again. You're not welcome at a Blue Jays game for a year. There shouldn't be an international manhunt. Yet a couple of kids that are stalking little children somehow are just having fun and get a warning. What kind of priorities do we have here? But I've always said people's priorities are twisted. People will spend $700 for a new iPhone. They'll spend thousands of dollars to get their car fixed. But if they need a babysitter, oh, they don't want to pay more than $10 an hour now, do they? You know, for your own damn children, you'll pay some, you know, teenager you don't know $10. But hey, no problem giving Apple your money. Our priorities are a little bit twisted right now. And me, I actually wonder, why the hell aren't these kids arrested for stalking children? You know, I don't care if they're 15. They're little punks. You're a little punk. And I tell you what, I'm like Joe Davola, who, interestingly enough, did dress up as a clown, when you remember, and scared the hell out of Kramer, who's scared of clowns. I'm not scared of clowns. And like Joe Davola, I'm leaving my door open right now, hoping to invite intruders. And I hope an intruder shows up dressed like a clown, because blood will be spilt and it won't be mine. Now, ultimately, the creepy clown epidemic's going to come to an end eventually. Clown's going to get shot and killed. And my best bet of the weekend, and I got some best bets today, but my best bet of the weekend is a clown will get shot in Florida. Book it. Probably happens this weekend, actually. Come on, Florida, people are already looking for a reason to shoot somebody. Now, I didn't want to talk about my own creepy clown encounter, but I was actually traumatized as well by a creepy clown. And in fact, it's been two weeks in a row, and it's been bad, man. You know, I've been having nightmares about it. You know, my creepy clown, he was dressed in like white and green, and he had this like awful, scary, thick beard. And, you know, he wore like number 14. I think his name was like Ryan Fitzpatrick. And like the kids in the schoolyard who are having nightmares about the creepy clouds, I'm having nightmares about Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now, if, you know, the creepy cloud epidemic, don't worry, it's going to come to an end. But if you want some creepy clouds, just watch the National Football League this Sunday. There's a chance you're going to see more than one creepy clowns, and chances are they'll be wearing green and white. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. Oh, I've got the sweats right now. Yeah, I got chills as I talked about my encounter with a creepy clown 2 weeks in a row in green and white and a big, scary beard. Now I've got the cold sweats and stuff. They're settling in. But in all honesty and sincerity, Ryan Fitzpatrick should have a chance to put up some decent numbers this week. But listen, he's thrown six interceptions 2 games ago. He cut that in half. He can't cut that in half. He's not going to throw 1.5 interceptions against Pittsburgh. So I'll say I'm going to go with 2. I'm going to say like over-under turnovers for Ryan Fitzpatrick this week. 2.5. Two turnovers, 1 fumble. It's inevitable. But nevertheless, we'll talk some NFL football. Pat Mayo is going to join me in studio with his super lock of the week. Gary and Thorne with us. We'll talk some fantasy matchups. And let's bring in Steve Merrill right now, one of the coverage experts, ProSportsInfo.com, to run down a very, very busy Friday afternoon and evening. If you like football and baseball, then it's a pretty good day today, Steve. What's going on?
Yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick's one of the smartest players in NFL history based on, like, IQ and Wonderlic. He might figure out a way to have 1.5 turnovers.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, though, he's the classic example of why that Wonderlic doesn't mean anything.
Well, I mean, Albert Einstein wouldn't have been a good quarterback either.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Hillary Clinton has an IQ of 146. I don't want her running the country, let alone my offense.
Yeah, it's all about balance in life. We talk about that in a lot of things. You don't want the dumbest guy in the world being the quarterback, but you also don't want the smartest. You want just an average, down-the-road, middle-tier person who they don't outthink everything. And it's kind of the same
like
problem with politics.
Like a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, right? Not too smart, yeah. Not too dumb.
I'm dead serious about that. And in politics, it wouldn't be a bad thing either. All these politicians think they're much smarter than the average American. They think they know what's best for all of us. That's one of the big problems in there.
No, you're actually right about that. It's funny because I was reading about presidential IQs and...
some of the worst ever have been the highest IQs. That's actually a fascinating thing to Google sometime, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually amazing. Like, people are like, oh, George Bush is really stupid. He's got like 133 IQ. And in fact, the story I was reading, Donald Trump would have the lowest IQ out of any president in American history.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. I'm surprised it'd be the lowest ever. I think Reagan was down there, and he was very successful, obviously. And I think Obama's pretty high up, actually. So, you know, take it for what it's worth.
Yeah, I like your Reagan.
I'm just giving the facts here. Yeah, I'm just giving the numbers.
You know, it's a funny thing when Ronald Reagan, actually, he was doing a speech once, and he was talking about how he was only a C student.
Right.
I think he went to the University of Iowa, actually. He was talking about he was a C student. And he said he was president at the time, and he goes, I can only imagine what I could have accomplished if I would have done better in school.
Well, this is true, too. Most of the CEOs in the business world were C students, and that's actually a big problem because most of these guys were the fraternity club presidents, you know, and they were very personable. They get along with people, but they're not exactly the sharpest people in the world. That's another thing to look up, CEOs. We can talk about that some other time. That's a whole nother conversation.
All right, so I don't know if David Price is a pretty smart guy. He went to Vanderbilt. So, baseball, though, they don't do Wonderlic in baseball. Why is it only football?
Jay Cutler went to Vanderbilt also, don't forget.
Yeah, and Jay Cutler, yeah. So you notice, like, the smarter the school, the more turnover, Steve. Right. I think you're on to something here.
Like, handicapping factor.
Huh? And look, you know, like, Tyrod Taylor went to Virginia Tech. He rarely turns the ball over.
Yeah, we just play the party schools versus the academic schools whenever they're an underdog, and we hit 60% the rest of the season.
I like where we're going with this. So, David Price, man, yeah, he's a smart guy, Vanderbilt, but he's 0-7. Not smart enough, Steve, to win in the playoffs. 0-7 in the postseason.
Well, it's interesting because right after that, about an hour after that game starts, we have the Nationals-Dodgers, and Kershaw, maybe the greatest pitcher in recent history, and he's had the biggest dichotomy between regular season and postseason, and David Price is probably a close second. So it is something you have to keep in mind because it's not a fluke. I mean, these guys play, you know, it's a 162-game season. These guys pitched 30, 35 times. What's interesting about Kershaw, though, is that he missed a month and a half this year, so he might actually be fresher than normal. And then, of course, you know, you never know if the pressure gets to guys. A guy like Madison Bumgarner, he says he doesn't pitch any differently, but obviously he does. I mean, he's big time. And David Price, the numbers don't lie. He has been, his postseason numbers are much worse than his regular season numbers, and that is a concern.
Well, David Price is 10-3 in his career versus the Indians. He beat them this year. David Price, the last six times that he's been to Cleveland, the team that he was pitching for, won the baseball game. Corey Kluber's going for the Tribe. Listen, I think Boston are a dangerous team. I think they're going to win this series, but this five-game format is extremely dangerous, so they better win today's baseball game. Game's a pick 'em. I'm going to go with the Red Sox out of desperation today.
Well, we talk about momentum in baseball in the regular season. It carries over in the postseason, too. The Red Sox, you know, were unbeatable a couple weeks ago, and then they finished. Now they're on a 1-6 slide. They were 1-5 at the end of the regular season. They're now 1-6 their last seven. And it hasn't been a fluke, Gabe. It's been the offense. You know, this is the best offense in baseball all year long. They're averaging just 3 runs per game their last 8. They're barely batting .210 as a team over the past 8 games. So it's really the offense that's been hurting the club right now.
All right, so the Dodgers and the Nationals, as you mentioned, Kershaw versus Scherzer. The Dodgers are 5-1 against them this year. I actually remember both series. It was impressive. They won 2 of 3 at Washington. I remember they caught Washington in sort of a funk on the West Coast, and they beat them up. The Dodgers are 17-4 this year when Kershaw pitches. As you mentioned, he was injured, but he started 21 times. The Dodgers have a 17-4 record when he's on the hill. You know, Kershaw, like Price, great numbers against the Nationals, 11-2. He beat them twice this year, Steve. He struck out 22 batters in 15 innings against Washington. Dodgers don't have momentum. They played well down the stretch, but they were flat in the final weekend. They allowed San Francisco to get in, and they might regret it. Washington just aren't healthy. They're a banged-up baseball club, but they got a shot with Scherzer on the hill, And you mentioned Kershaw's postseason failures. He's 2-6 with a 4.59 ERA in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough call because obviously going against Kershaw, you're going against the greatest pitcher in baseball in the last couple of decades probably. But he hasn't been all that strong in the postseason. I think a lot of that has to do with fatigue, though, so maybe it is less of an issue this year. But, hey, look, we're getting Scherzer as a home underdog at plus 135. That's not a bad option. I mean, against anybody else in baseball, you'd be jumping on that. The under 6 is obviously pretty obvious. My power ratings actually make this total 6, so I didn't see any value with the total. If I had to play it, I'd probably take the underdog just because I really think the game's a toss-up and you're getting a plus 135 home dog. It's one of the best teams in baseball still.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, actually, which leads me into the Giants and the Cubs. And I don't know if the fact that I'm a Dodger fan, I'm a little biased on that one, Steve. And I think the Dodgers are going to win the series, so they don't win with Kershaw today. They're in a lot of trouble. So I'm going in on that. But the Giants and the Cubs leads me to this. And I'm a big believer. We saw the Texas Rangers, Steve, yesterday. Extremely sloppy, man, out of the gate. And the Blue Jays were a team that played intense baseball down the stretch. They played in the play-in wild card game the other night, and they've kept it rolling in the first couple of games, looking good as we speak right now live, Steve. So, you know, the Cubs haven't played meaningful baseball like in forever, essentially. They've got to ramp it up a notch. Meanwhile, you got momentum in San Francisco coming in here. And everyone talks about Madison Bumgarner so much, and that's good. But people aren't talking about Johnny Cueto enough. And if you look at Cueto's numbers comparative to Bumgarner, there's really not that much of a difference, Steve. I'm not saying Cueto's Madison Bumgarner, but Cueto's a big game, big money pitcher that's been here and done this before. He's a World Series champion, and he had a hell of a year this year.
Yeah, when I was looking at this game, that's kind of what jumped out to me. Now, Cueto's numbers overall this season, nothing special, but compared to Bumgarner especially. But yeah, his postseason, he's the exact opposite of Price and Kershaw. He pitches better in the postseason compared to the regular season. You have to respect that. And you look at his mindset and his mentality, it's not a fluke. You know, he's a high-energy guy. He's very confident. I think that's the real X factor in this series. And here's something, Gabe, nobody's talking about. You know, statistically, you might have been better off if you're San Francisco not pitching Bumgarner in the wild card game. I know that sounds crazy, and you probably don't win the game against Syndergaard, to be honest, but you have much less of a chance now because you could have had him for games 1 and 4 like the Dodgers do with Kershaw, and you maybe could have beaten the Cubs. I think it's going to be very tough here. He's going to pitch game 3, and if he does pitch a game 5, if it even happens, it'd be on short rest. I just think the Giants are in a tough spot with Bumgarner not going until game 3. Cubs are a powerhouse team. That X factor there is, you know, they've never won, but one of the best offensive and defensive teams all season long.
I don't have a problem with it. I think Cueto can get the job done. He's very familiar with Wrigley. He was a longtime Cincinnati Red. He's pitched there a million times. He'll be able to go 2 times. You got Bumgarner going once. And as well, let's not kid ourselves. They're going to figure out a way. They're going to figure out a way to get Bumgarner on the hill in more than just one game as well. If anyone thinks, oh, you're only going to see Bumgarner once here, you're kidding yourself. They're going to figure out a way to get him involved. It's going to be a great managerial battle between Bochy and Madden. So who do you like tonight?
Yeah, I didn't have anything on this game. I thought the total looked a little slow, though. 6.5, obviously, Wrigley, you got to check the wind and whatnot, and that's one of the reasons it's low. But the Cubs are a very good offensive team still. They got good pitching, but they can hit the ball. The real question here is if the Giants can do enough to push it over the total. We'll have to keep an eye on the win, but at 6.5, that looked like a pretty low number.
You know, the Cubs won the season series 4-3. 5 of the 7 games were one-run games. Something to keep in mind for you run-line players out there. And another thing, I brought this up yesterday, the Cubs are kind of front-runners, Steve. They beat up on bad teams in a division. When the Cubs are winning a baseball game, their batting average is .270. When the Cubs are losing a baseball game, their batting average is .232. It's a big, big difference right there. They left more men on base than anyone in baseball. They only hit like .219 with 2 out and runners in scoring position. You know, I'm interested to see how the Cubs perform when it's a tight around the collar type of game.
Yeah, what's interesting, Gabe, is the Cubs won 103 games this year, but they went just 22-23 in games decided by 1 run either way. So, you know, they could have been even better than 103 runs. But then the other way to look at that is that they did not perform well in close games, like you're saying.
All right, so let's blast through the college football card tonight. A busy college football card tonight, Steve. So let's jump right in with the biggest game on tap, the Clemson Tigers. They're laying 17.5 right now against Boston College. Total is 43. 17 is a lot. The Tigers have won 7 of last 8, but last 4 games that they played against Boston College been decided by 17 or less. This Boston College defense ranked number 1 in total yards allowed, number 1 versus the pass, number 7 versus the run. Now, they haven't played a very tough schedule, but nevertheless, they got a quality defense, and Clemson aren't a great road team.
And they did hold Georgia Tech to 121 rushing yards back in week 1. You know, they haven't played a tough schedule otherwise with UMass, Wagner, and Buffalo. A lot of people thought they had a shot against Virginia Tech. They were a 6.5-point dog, lost 49-0. That is a major concern, obviously, because Clemson's even better. But this is a terrible scheduling spot for the Tigers. The back-and-forth huge home win last Saturday night against Louisville. Now they have to turn and play on a short week and travel on top of that. I think this is a good spot for Boston College. My power ratings made the line 18, so there's really actually not any line value. But I still think the spot trumps the lack of line value. I'd still take a shot with Boston College just because of the fact they are a good defensive home dog against a team that might be a little flat.
I might have been the most excited person in North America when I saw that Old Dominion and UMass were playing, Steve, because I was like, if we got one guy on, this is your backyard, Steve. We're counting on you for some expertise here with Old Dominion. But one thing I know about the Monarchs is this team scores when they're at home. They're averaging 45 points per game when they play at home. And you and I have been doing this for years, even before they got into the FCS, that you've always talked about what a good home team the Monarchs are.
Yeah, and they actually guaranteed we wouldn't get hit by the hurricane here in Virginia because they moved this game like on Monday from Saturday to Friday night. And weather's not even an issue now. It's going to rain tomorrow, but it wouldn't have been a problem. They moved the Hampton game back in week 1 to Sunday because of storms. So this is actually the second time in 5 weeks that Old Dominion's had a schedule change at home. So they should be pretty used to it. UMass was actually okay with it. They have a chartered flight, so it's not going to affect them either. They're going to get in and out. The gates are opening at 5:30 for this kickoff, so maybe a little less tailgating. But this is still a very strong home field for Old Dominion. They pack 20,000-plus of these home games. And I like the spot for them tonight. I think the scheduling change benefits the home team that's staying at home, has done it already. Might disrupt UMass a little bit more.
You know what? UMass is battled, but they're getting worn out right now. They got a punishing game against Mississippi State. I think it's starting to catch up to them a little bit. And that offense is pretty anemic, Steve. You're right. It's 8.5. But with that being said, I just don't see how UMass offense is ranked 126th in the nation is going to be able to score enough points against the Monarchs, who are desperate to go bowling, Steve, as you know.
Yeah, and Old Dominion put up 52 last week, 33 the week before. It looks like they're starting to click offensively.
All right, SMU and Tulsa. Tulsa, 17's the key number tonight, Steve. All these games, minus 17. We'll get to Boise, same number in a second, although it came down a little bit. But actually, no, this is the one that came down. My bad. So I've seen SMU went to 15.5 right before I came into the studio against Tulsa. Line feels a little bit high, but one thing that concerns me with the Mustangs is only putting up 19 points per game, Steve. Where's that potent Mustang attack?
Yeah, and whenever you're taking a big underdog, you're always worried about that because that, you know, limits your backdoor cover potential. That's what you kind of hope for. You don't necessarily think SMU can win this game outright. You just hope they stay within the big number. They've been very mediocre, both running and throwing the football. But what they've been good at, actually, is defensively this year. They give up 30 points a game, but their opponents have averaged 31. They've played some tough offensive teams, and they've held their own. Tulsa, not a good defensive team years past. You know, they're a little bit better this year. I think there could be some points here. I think Tulsa's willing to play fast, and SMU can do enough to score and keep up.
I totally agree with you, Steve. I'm going to take a shot with the underdog and the over as well. I think this is a game that the Mustangs' offense puts up some points.
Yeah, I agree with you. And like I said, you know, Tulsa's defense, nothing special.
All right, let's wrap up. Let's wrap it up with Boise State and New Mexico. How about this, Steve? Revenge spot. Remember last year, the Lobos won what? They were 31-point road underdogs. They won 31-24. They played 2 years ago as well, and the game was 60-49. And in fact, the Lobos have covered 5 straight against the Broncos, Steve. When I look at this game, I'm looking more at the over than laying the points. If I had to, I'd lay the points. But I like the over in this game. 61 seems like a fair number, 61.5.
Yeah, I mean, for Boise to win by more than 19, it probably has to go over, because just to win by 3 touchdowns, you almost kind of have to have a high-scoring game. Boise's only put up 21 points last week against Utah State as a 24-point home favorite. They didn't even score the spread. That's always kind of a red flag for me. And I know it's a revenge spot here, but that's, you know, easier said than done. Like you said, New Mexico's played them tough for several years now. When they were here a couple years ago, that 11-point win, they were an 18-point road favorite. Same line as tonight, basically. So I think New Mexico can do enough here to keep it close. They run for 347 yards a game. Boise allows just 72 yards a game, 2.5 yards per carry. That's going to be the real X factor here, is if that, you know, run-based attack for New Mexico can keep it going against a very good run defense.
Steve Merrill, thanks for running the gauntlet with us, Steve. We broke down every game on the card tonight, except the CFL game, Saskatchewan Rough Riders and the Ottawa Red Blacks.
Yeah, that would have taken me 3 seconds. Pass. So there we go.
Always a pleasure, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Steve Merrill with us. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We got Gary and Thorne. We're talking fantasy matchups. We got Pat Mayles, Super Lock of the Week. I've got a Millionaire Maker lineup for you, and I got picks for almost every game. Actually, I do have a pick for every game on the board tonight, and there's a lot of games on tap. Game time decision continues. Game time decisions live on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. You never know what's going to happen when you're live. There could be a party that breaks out next door, and a bird could arrive. And, you know, I always wanted to get more interactive with this show, but, you know, we're all swamped around here. The ideas sort of hit you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to do that last month. You know what I mean? But you know, we should have a segment brought to you by Twitter as the bird tweets.
Yeah, it's a nice little segue you could have there.
That's the first time you've heard him, huh?
Yeah, I haven't been in the studio as much lately. A lot of podcast booth for me, but yeah, there's
once he was chirping so loud last week that the mic was actually picking it up a bit. I don't mind him. I don't mind the bird. For some reason, I think it's good
like
luck.
He's like your mascot.
It's good luck. All right, so let's jump in here and talk about Hot Roster. This is a new fantasy format, Gary.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about it, and let's get into some fantasy matchups after that.
Yeah, so Hot Roster is basically a game you can play on a multitude of platforms at this point. You can play it on your phone, whether that be Android, or iPhone. You can also play it on their website, hotroster.com. And actually, myself and Cam Stewart are going to be hosting a show daily, starting after Canadian Thanksgiving, here Tuesday next week on the network, airing at 4:30, Hot Roster Daily. So, it's going to be breaking it down. So essentially what you're doing here is you can play a multitude of different cards on their site. You put some money on there. You can kind of pick how much you want to play on each card, whether that be $1, $5, $10. And what you have to do is they give you a variety of matchups, and these are one-on-one based matchups dependent on fantasy points. So if they give you two players, maybe it's Antonio Brown versus Odell Beckham Jr., and you have to pick who's going to have more fantasy points this week. There might be a little bit of a point spread in terms of that, and you take these matchups and you stick at least 4 up to 10 together on a card, and if they all come through, you win the money.
It looks like a lot of fun, actually, and looking at the matchups that are on the card this week, a couple of them jump off the page at me, so I'll read out the matchup, I'll tell you who I like, and you go sure. Agree or disagree. All right, Jerick McKinnon versus Terrence West. I like West a lot this week, yeah. Aaron. You look at that Washington Redskins defense. Everyone talks about how bad they are against the pass. They're pretty bad against the run, too.
They're the worst against the run by some
metrics. 133 yards a game type bad.
133 yards per game. Football Outsiders, they do their DVOA stats, and they have them as the worst run defense in all of football. They have not been able to stop anyone, starting with D'Angelo Williams week one in that Monday night game against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And McKinnon's got the Houston Texans. You know, it could be a lower scoring game. The Vikings defense is great.
And it seems like people are maybe, I don't want to take anything away from J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt's a great player, but Houston still has a pretty good defense without J.J. Watt. Yeah. And I know that it was just the Titans last week, but I think they're still a formidable opponent. And
both those coaches, Gary, are both going to be comfortable in a 17-14 style football game.
Yeah, and I think, too, people are getting a little too worried about Terrence West's value this week. I know in season-long fantasy formats, there's reason to be concerned. At some point, Kenneth Dixon's going to get a look, but not this week. It's Dixon's first week back. He hasn't played a game since the preseason. I'm seeing maybe 5 to 10 touches, like max. So West is still going to get his 15, 20, maybe even 25 touches in this game. I know he doesn't catch a lot of pass out of the backfield, but for the purposes of Hot Roster, that doesn't matter. This isn't PPR. This is standard. So Jerick McKinnon, who brings a lot of his value to the table in the pass catching market, that doesn't really have as much of a share, as much of a value on Hot Roster.
Yeah, that's right. It's a non-PPR format, 4 points per touchdown pass, 6 points per rushing and passing touchdown as a scoring format. Is this one too easy with Jordy Nelson and Kelvin Benjamin, especially with the quarterback situation? Although I like the DA. I've got no problem with Derek Anderson, but that's more so, you know, Carolina winning a football game than from a fantasy standpoint. And Jordy Nelson's just in a favorable situation this weekend against the New York Giants.
Well, you don't really know who's going to play for the Giants at this point. I mean, Eli Apple probably won't play in this game. They have other issues, maybe even more issues than at cornerback than at safety, where both their starters might not play this week against the Packers. So I think, Jordy Nelson, even though he's a 2-point favorite in this matchup, you're going to need him to score at least 2.5 more fantasy points than Kelvin Benjamin. I'm with you. I don't think the fact that Derek Anderson is playing is a negative necessarily. I think that if anything, it might give more touchdown expectation to Kelvin Benjamin when they are in the red zone, because you don't have to worry about Cam just taking it into the end zone all by himself. But Benjamin, through the first 4 weeks of the season, has kind of been sporadic when he shows up. I mean, there was the big game against Denver the opening week, but he's had flashes and he's caught some touchdowns, but Nelson has been pretty consistent. Nelson, he's got a bunch of touchdowns. He really hasn't had his yardage week yet. I mean, that could be this week.
But you're right. Aaron looks for him in the end zone.
Yeah.
All right.
And Rodgers looking good too lately, which is important.
I think Rodgers and Nelson both are good, favorable fantasy situations. All right. This next matchup is interesting here with Melvin Gordon in a pretty good situation, taking on an Oakland Raider team, which it should be a pretty high scoring game against Elliott, the head to head matchup. So Gordon's minus a half a fantasy point favorite against Elliott here against the Cincinnati Bengals. What do you make of that, this matchup?
It's a tough one, because I would say that in a vacuum, Ezekiel Elliott is a far better running back than Melvin Gordon. I mean, Melvin Gordon has been putting up big fantasy weeks as of late, and he's had some great matchups the last couple of weeks, and that doesn't change.
And in a favorable situation, because there's no depth at the position.
But he has struggled. I mean, he's gotten the Saints and the Colts the last 2 weeks, and he's only averaged 2 yards per carry over 35 carries the last 2 weeks. He just keeps getting in the end zone. And I don't think that's going to stop.
And you know, Elliott, even though the Bengals are going to be banging and that's going to be a physical game, you know they're giving them the ball like 28 times.
Very likely.
Not 28, but let's say, 23.
And they basically ruled out Dez at this point.
Actually, it might be 28. He got the ball 30 times
exactly.
Once already, right?
It's not to be ruled off the table, but I think Cincinnati has such a better defense than Oakland that I'm going to give this one to Melvin Gordon because I think he scores the touchdown.
You know who's not a great fantasy player, but he's always on all my teams, and I have him on two teams, is Jeremy Hill.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Hill's going to have a nice day. Why? He's going to get a couple of touchdowns.
He scores touchdowns.
He really does. All right. Jarvis Landry. Oh, what team does he play for?
I believe he plays for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, all right. Jarvis Landry versus Amari Cooper. Cooper has been, same thing. People are expecting bigger numbers. He's had some nice matchups. Crabtree's been...
stealing his touchdowns like he always does.
The Crabman's been stepping up and in here. I don't know. What's the weather situation like? Is it going to be raining heavily? But you have that. You have a canopy in Miami now anyways, right?
There's the sort of half dome.
The tent.
It's a canopy. Yeah, it's a canopy, basically. Yeah,
it's a very expensive canopy.
I would say, again, the important thing to think about on Hot Roster here is that it is not PPR. And Jarvis Landry gets so much of his value from being in a PPR. Though Amari Cooper, for the type of receiver that he is and the amount of yards per catch that he has, the ADOT that he usually brings to the table, he's not a guy who gets in the end zone all that much because, as we talked about, it's clear that when Oakland is in the red zone, Derek Carr is looking at Crabtree. That's been the case in the narrative for about a year and a half at this point. But I would still say that San Diego, especially losing Jason Verrett last week, Cooper's stats right now, he's basically like Odell Beckham without the crying. Like, he's put up the yardage. He just hasn't gotten the end zone.
You got to go with Cooper here.
I think this is the week he gets in the end zone. I think that's the important part here.
And the thing is, you never really know, with Miami. And Ryan Tannehill is just so erratic.
Yeah.
I was more positive about the Dolphins than you were a couple of weeks ago. Now I agree with you. They're terrible. They're just a loss. They're clueless. Yeah. They're terrible.
And the Titans are bad too, but their defense actually isn't that poor. And the Titans, to their credit, have held opposing teams to the least amount of plays in their red zone this season. So the Dolphins might not even get that many cracks at the end zone for Jarvis Landry.
Okay, so we've got about a minute or so left. Let's wrap it up with a quarterback battle. Tom Brady, -2.5 fantasy points versus Andrew Luck. Brady at Cleveland. Andrew Luck hosting the Chicago Bears. I think Brady goes off big time this week in his return. He's a spiteful person. We know this. You're a Dolphin fan. I'm a Bill fan.
Yep.
You know that he's angry. He's got a chip on his shoulder. Belichick won't let up. I wouldn't be surprised if Brady threw for four touchdowns this week.
Yeah, and I think the touchdowns are going to be the important part because I do think, and again, it's going to be important to see which version of the Patriots and which version of Belichick show up because I think there is a very serious chance they run away with this game very early. And it's going to be, are they in FU mode? Are they in we don't care? Yeah. We're going to put up 60 points against the Titans.
Yeah, you're right. LeGarrette Blount could get some touches.
This could be a big game for LeGarrette Blount in the second half. So I'm going to take Luck just because I think that in this situation, you're giving me two of the top quarterbacks in the league, both with very, very good matchups. I know the Bears looked good against Matthew Stafford last week. I think that has more to do with the ball. The fact that the Lions never had the ball last week. I think the Colts are going to have it a little bit more than the Lions did. But give me the guy who's playing at home. And I just think that playing on that track, playing in the dome of Indianapolis, I think that Brady could have the bigger first half, but I'm a little concerned that they get up by too many
points.
Here
we're going with that. I'm going to go, this is the only one we disagree on. I'll go with Brady in this, but I understand Garion's argument. Check it out, Hot Roster. It's a very, very cool and interesting format. And check out Garion Thorne and the Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart. How can it not be a good time? Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. The Toronto Blue Jays continue to beat up on the Texas Rangers. Now currently up 4-1. We didn't have a pick for you for that game because obviously it started. take the over 2.5 first two innings.
And take the over like plus 1.5 runs. Are we good to go? We win a lot of money today.
Yeah, that's it. But we do have some picks coming up for the remaining baseball games. But we're talking football right now with Pat Mayo. It's Pat Mayo's Super Lock of the Week, although we'll build up to the Super Lock in a couple of moments.
Pat Mayo's Crap Lock of the Week.
Well, you're 4 weeks in and you're sitting at 2-2. And
I'm losing money on the VIG.
Yeah, no, it's true. You're down,
I'm down,
you're
money.
Down 40 cents.
Yeah, it sucks.
You're down 40 cents right now. A fourth of a unit, so to speak. But it's been a tricky and unpredictable and strange NFL season so far.
I thought I had it last week with the Ravens. They weren't looking good.
It's a roller coaster.
And then they jumped out to the lead. And then John Harbaugh, man, like, what was he doing? Not taking penalties and he made so many poor tactical decisions in that game, not accepting penalties, and then there's a fumble at the end of the game. Sucks to be on the wrong side of one of those ones, but I feel like I put my lucky jacket back on. I'm 2-0 wearing this jacket, so I'm going to go to 3-0.
All right, let's talk about a football game that you wanted to touch on quickly here, the Chicago Bears and the Indianapolis Colts. The Colts are 4.5-point favorites. The total is 48.5 here. It's only a matter of time until Chuck Pagano pays the price and is let go. The fact that they have so many injuries might give them a little bit of a crutch, but eventually that crutch will wear out, and Ursray's pretty crazy, and he'll get fired. You know, how's this for a stat, Pat? It's been 60 games since a Colt rushed for over 100 yards.
It doesn't surprise me.
It's
what happens when you have Frank Gore and you're constantly trailing.
Andrew Luck was sacked 6 times last week. I don't like the Colts here. I don't like this game, but if I had to take a side, I'd take the Chicago Bears plus the 4.5.
I mean, I'm seeing it at 5 now as of this afternoon because everyone just keeps piling on the Colts. I don't get it. It's almost insane to me why people every single week go back and end up taking Indianapolis. I get that Andrew Luck's their quarterback, and he can always save you. We've seen that in the fourth quarter of these games when they're down. He can drive you back, but getting 5 points is a lot. I know the Bears aren't very good, but they can go into Indianapolis and keep this a field goal game. They can win this game. Brian Hoyer looks shockingly competent under center. And, I mean, I'm the biggest Jay Cutler supporter there is. Hoyer looks better than Jay Cutler. This offense works better. And I don't care that Kevin...
No, exactly right.
I don't care that Kevin White's not playing.
You know, Jay Cutler's got a better cannon, and he's got more upside, supposedly. But we talked about it. Brian Hoyer covers point spreads, Pat.
He does.
That's what he does. He wins games, and he covers point spreads. He's now like 17-12 in his career as a starter.
And there's a big split between Brian Hoyer. When he plays a really good defense, he sucks. When he plays a bad defense, very competent. So I like the Bears, plus 5, plus 4.5, doesn't matter.
What about the wide receiver position situation, though? Is Royal going to be good to go? I expect that he is.
Royal's banged up. He'll be good to go. Alshon's banged up. He should be good to go. Zach Miller is going to be fine.
All in good situations.
And Jordan Howard in that backfield, man, he's going to be the highest owned guy in daily fantasy this week for good reason.
All right, you and I often do a weekly bid on the Minnesota Vikings. Here they are again.
I've picked them all 4 weeks. They're 4-0 against the spread, so they're saving me. The Super Locks cost me 40 cents. The Vikings are making up for it.
You take the Vikings out of the equation, you're in a lot of trouble. The point spread It was only like 4.5, 5 earlier in the week. It's sitting at 7 right now. Johnny Public is clicking away on the Minnesota Vikings.
Time to jump off. Time to take the
people
Texans.
Say this every week, but
I don't.
Listen, the Vikings.
I don't say it every week.
18-2 against the spread in their last 20 games. But how many times in the last 20 games were the Vikings 7-point favorites?
There.
None.
And that's the whole thing. We saw this last year too. I think it was a Green Bay game, or it was the week before a Green Bay game. Remember, we jumped on the Vikings. They got tuned by the Packers. But it was the week before. They started just all of a sudden, everyone just jumped on the Vikings after 8 weeks of ignoring them. They got a big total. All the public jumped on Minnesota. And then they didn't cover. I feel the same thing here. I mean, they're holding opponents the last 9 games to under 17 points per game. I think they probably still do that against the Texans. That's just a big number to cover. And the Houston defensive line, even without J.J. Watt, is still incredibly good at getting to the passer. The Vikings offensive line is garbage.
Oh, it's going to be a low-scoring game.
So if it's a low-scoring game, give me the 7 points.
Yeah. And
that's my logic on it. I don't think Houston's good. But, you know, they can stay within a field goal. But Blair Walsh, if there's a chance for the Vikings.
The Blair Walsh project?
Blair Walsh is going to be in there to like for a field goal to cover.
He's their
make it.
He's their weakness, Pat. I know that's an understatement, but that's their one problem. The Vikings in a close game, NFC Conference Championship game.
And ever since
you can't even trust this guy to make a 38.
No, and ever since he missed that kick in the playoffs, he's been god-awful. So if the Vikings cover this game, they're going to need to do it with a defensive score, and that's just a hard thing to bank on. So give me the Texans.
I don't think Osweiler and the Texans offense is going to have a fun time here.
No, they might score 10 points.
Yeah, it's going to be a low-scoring game on both sides of the field, I believe. The Jets and the Steelers.
I love this game, and I don't know why.
So don't tell me. Yeah, knowing you the way I do, I assume you like the Jets then.
I do like the Jets.
No, you like to be contrarian.
They're up to plus.
So what's the deal with Decker? I don't expect Decker.
I don't expect
more
Decker
time
to
have sex with your wife, Decker. You can schedule more sex time.
Babe.
Like, I'm tired of hearing about how big his package is and how he has sex all the time.
Jealous.
Shut up and get on the
field. Sounds
like
you're jealous of Eric Decker and his hot wife and big cannon.
The only thing I'm jealous about Decker is his big bank account.
Yeah. Either way.
All right. Anyways.
So off Decker's dick, and we're going to get into Quincy Enunwa. He's not practicing right now. He's still expected to play in this. Brandon Marshall is just such a matchup nightmare for the Steelers defense. And the one thing we've seen with Fitzpatrick.
Nightmare. There's your nightmare, Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick's going to be fine in this game. He's going to be fine in this game.
He's terrible.
He's a great start in DFS this week. This game projects to be very high paced. Both teams throw the ball a lot. And what you're going to see is a lot of incompletions, thus stopping the clock, giving a lot of time for the over to hit and a lot of plays to be run. So from an analytic level, I can see it happening. And even if the same thing happens as last week, where Pittsburgh gets out to a huge lead, I have more faith that the Jets have just better players on offense, whether it's Marshall, whether it's Forte, whether it's Enunwa, that they can actually post points when Pittsburgh's not trying, unlike the Kansas City Chiefs. I like the 7.5, and I'll take it on the road.
I don't have time to adamantly disagree with Pat Mayo here, although the Steelers seem to screw me all the time. It's a dangerous and tricky spot for the
Jets
Steelers.
Jets need to win, too. They have to win this game or they're done.
But we don't have enough time to debate this because we got to get to Pat Mayo's Super Lock of the week, sitting at 2-2 after 4 weeks. So this is a big, big pick for you, Pat. What you got?
All right. So I got the jacket. I got the pink shirt. I got the sleeves rolled up. You just put some stuff on the table. I'm good to go in Miami this week.
It's like Miami Vice.
It's down to 3.5. There's reverse line movement in this game already. People are on Tennessee. This game's going to happen. The Hurricane is not going to have it canceled. So -4, it opens at the week. Everyone bets on Tennessee. It's now down to 3.5. Like, Miami is way better than Tennessee. And I don't like Miami. Miami's kind of garbage. But Tennessee,
they're terrible.
Even worse. Miami's going to have this at home. I know they're not a great home team, but Tannehill versus Mariota right now. Mariota actually looks almost as bad as Blaine Gabbert does, at least through the first part of the season. If Sue shows up for this game, even if he shows up for half the snaps in this game, they're just going to pester this team. The only way that I think that Tennessee covers this number, DeMarco Murray goes absolutely bananas, but that's the only thing that they're doing on offense right now. I think Landry has a big game. I think that Devontae Parker has a big game. And if you want to roll out Ryan Tannehill and some cash games on DK, he's probably safe for like 280 and 2 touchdowns.
You know, I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again, Pat. The Miami Dolphins are like frozen pizza. It always looks good in the box, but it never tastes good when you eat it. And the Titans are the only thing that I can give you is the Titans are 2-7 against the spread.
Titans are terrible.
The road.
How about that? They might be the worst team in football.
The Dolphins have been outyarded in all 4 games they played. How about this? The Miami Dolphins have been outyarded in 21 of their last 26 football games. Tannehill's just clueless. He's useless.
Listen, I'm not going to sit here and defend Tannehill, but the teams that are getting kind of waxed on Thursday nights the week before have all come back to cover the spread the
next
week.
That has been a solid trend over the years. Pat Mayo, super lock, the Miami Dolphins, minus the 3.5 points. Game time decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, it's time for our weekly Millionaire Maker lineup. We've made you money 3 out of the 4 weeks so far in the National Football League regular season. We had a great lineup last week, but we didn't have Julio Jones or Matt Ryan in the lineup. We made you money, but we're not millionaires. Let's keep trying. Let's start off with Tom Brady. He's back. Tom Brady's going to come back, and Tom Brady's going to just wreak havoc on the National Football League. He's a very, very petty and spiteful person. And you know, I expect Tom Brady to throw like for 4 touchdowns against the Cleveland Browns. Browns giving up 10 touchdown passes, third most in the National Football League. Le'Veon Bell should have been on him last week. Bell lit it up. What did he have? 18 carries, 5 receptions, put up 25.8 DK points. Listen, the New York Jets are actually pretty good against the run, but they're awful against the pass. And Le'Veon's just that damn good. He's running for dollars. He's running for your dollars, and he's running for his own dollars. It's a contract year. Tomlin doesn't seem to have any hesitation of using him. He had him in the game, even though it was a route. DeAndre Washington, sort of our value play of the week. $3,400. Murray's going to be out. This Washington kid can run, man. The kid is really fast. He can catch a ball out of the backfield. Nice matchup against San Diego. Have given up touchdowns to running backs in every game this year. A.J. Green, $8,500. You know it's coming, but you can't stop it. And the thing about A.J. Green is he puts up bigger numbers than Beckham does, than Hopkins does, or Brown does, but he's always cheaper. So I'm going to spend the $8,500. I like the matchup against the Dallas Cowboys. Tyrell Williams, $4,700. Steve Smith is back. Man, I don't know why you're retiring. Steve Smith is unbelievable. 16 catches in the last 2 weeks. Been targeted 22 times. I think the Redskins and the Ravens are going to be a higher scoring game. Rob Gronkowski's been back, but not really. He returns. Gronk hooks up with Brady. That's my little stack right there. We're going with Zach Ertz. People forgetting about Zach Ertz, but he had a great week one, 6 of 7. 6 catches, 7 targets in week one. He's back. Detroit terrible against the tight end position. And Ryan Tannehill sucks, so we're going with the Titans defense. Our plays of the day, Boston Red Sox, Los Angeles Dodgers, San Francisco Giants plus 165. A little CFL action for you. Don't look now, but Saskatchewan have won the last 2 straight. I think they covered tonight at 6.5. I like this game to go over the number at 53. Clemson and Boston College, college football. Give me Boston College plus the 17. Monarchs are going to roll UMass. Old Dominion minus the 8.5. UMass and Old Dominion over 54. The Monarchs put up 45 points a game when they play at home. Give me SMU plus 15.5. SMU and Tulsa over 65.5. And we wrap it up with Boise and Sheriff Lobo. Boise State, New Mexico, over 61.5. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.